You're listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea, K2AL, Hale'iwa. It's time for In the Garden, On the Farm.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
Aloha and welcome to In the Garden, On the Farm, your weekly radio program that cultivates the passion and knowledge for growing well with plants and animals. We're your hosts, Paul
and Robin.
And on today's show, we dig into nature's amazing medicine chest, gain clarity on pulling off a quality crop of carrots and their kin, and get hip with chippers. Aloha, Robin.
Aloha, Paul.
How you doing today?
I'm great. I'm still feeling high from that great tarot festival last weekend.
How about it down at Waipa?
Just so beautiful. What a great day. What a great group of people. It was just phenomenal.
Certainly enough. And thank goodness for the good rains we had, but the sunshine. And it was all placed in a good way. Saturday was a complete deluge up in Kalihiwai. And yet, Saturday was beautiful, and then it was raining on Monday. So a little window of perfection, and want to give a special thanks to our buddies Mac and Eroshan, who really pulled out all the stops there to get the Regenerations booth up and running, and then Rob came and helped out a lot. So thanks to all of you folks. We were very happy to be able to offer beautiful organically grown huli from One Song Farm, Sun and Lisa's beautiful farm, and we were able to give away hundreds of Mana'ulu huli, as well as taste tests for folks, and just to adopt those out in a good way and help perpetuate traditional culture. So mahalo to everybody who participated, to Stacy and everybody on the Waipa team. It was super fun, and let's do it again next year. Indeed, thanks as well to Uncle Jerry and Penny Levin, all the folks who came out from different islands to share their mana'o and their traditional cultural practices, and made poi right there on the spot, and to all the farmers. Wow, it was something.
Really, really was.
Hope you could join us. Well, we're going to start, as we always do, with the thanks, and then looking with great thanks to the heavens, the skies above, all the powerful forces of the planets, the stars, and everything that helps to influence growing conditions here on Kauai, and Oahu, too, I should say, since we've got listeners over there in Hale'iwa area. So we're going to start off with the Hawaiian moon calendar, thanks to Hui Mauli Ola, which is a nonprofit located on the island of Oahu that helps to generate a moon calendar that we look to for knowledge. And right now we're looking in the Anahulu of Poipoi, just begun today, and that is the rounding or full, the second of three phases of the moon's monthly circuit. And so we've just begun approaching the full moon. This time period is also called the first half of the moon's cycle is called Mahina Hapaluamua. In Western terminology, that's waxing moon, so the rising in size every night, or every period it comes around in a 24-hour period. So this Wednesday is Huna. That's the moon that rises at 2:08 p.m. this afternoon. She will reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 8:35 p.m., and she will set at 3:05 a.m. tomorrow morning. 73% of the beautiful moon's face is illuminated. And Huna is the first of 10 moons in Poipoi, that full rounding part of the phase of the moon. And it is said that the name Huna reflects the fact that this moon hides its horns for the first time. So if you look at the moon leading up to the Huna moon, it kind of looks like it has like cattle horns or maybe goat horns. And so you'll see sort of a sharp tip on the moon. Well, today's moon is the first moon that it's more rounded, and so it's Huna or hidden. However, in my research, the Hawaiian dictionaries don't define Huna as horned, so I'm not quite sure where that came from. some other tradition that had not been codified in the dictionaries. But Huna does mean a hidden secret, and it is said that secrets will be revealed today.
Mm-hmm.
So we're hoping that we can help reveal some gardening secrets with you all. One of the most popular Hawaiian chants that folks know is Eho Mai by Kumuhula Edith Kanakaole. And it speaks about the hidden secrets of the chants, the ancient chants, and a plea that we can gain the knowledge. And I think that in the Hawaiian, as well as other indigenous cultures, there's great reverence for what is not obvious and what comes only through sincere and humble application and observation, patience. And certainly those skills are what separates gardeners who don't have very much luck from ones that do. So give great thanks for that. It is recommended to plant ipu or gourds and other kind of root, or I should say root plants as well, on this moon that rises today. And I do want to give thanks as well to a resource that I use online all the time, and it is Napuke Vehevehe Olelo Hawaii. The literal translation of that would be the books that define Hawaiian words. And essentially it is a series of Hawaiian dictionaries. And when you put in a term, it searches all the dictionaries and you get all of the results from those different dictionaries. So thank goodness for the internet and thank goodness for computers that make our work so much easier. The online Hawaiian dictionaries can be found at vehevehe.org, which is W-E-H-E-W-E-H-E.org, and it's part of the Ulu Kau, or Hawaiian Electronic Library, which is found as well at ulukau, U-L-U-K-A-U.org. Lots of partner organizations make that happen, and for anybody who lives in the Hawaiian Islands, I really recommend you use that resource. And all the time, every day is an opportunity for us to hear a Hawaiian word maybe we don't know the definition, look it up, and get ma'a or familiar with. So that's the Hawaiian moon for you today.
Excellent. On the biodynamic look at things, today is actually an unproductive day for planting, so you can see to some other tasks such as seed cleaning or composting, things like that. Tomorrow, although the moon will be in Aries, it's oddly going to be a better time for flowers, and I was super curious about why that was. And it turns out that all of the air signs have there's basically a light trine happening with Jupiter and Saturn and Neptune. They're each in different air signs. And so this is going to make it a great time for flowers, whether or not you're planting flowers or cleaning seeds or planting a crop that you intend to collect seed from.
Are they perhaps more fragrant on a day like this?
I'm not so sure, but the big players in the sky, Jupiter and Saturn, of course, very visible to the naked eye. When they line up like this, it becomes something very important. And from what I understand, that has the potential to affect the weather in a warming kind of way, because air signs, light influences will abound, and they're warmer. Friday, the moon will be in Aries once again, however, moving then after the trine into better for fruit planting or fruit collecting. Saturday through Monday, we've got a stretch of the moon in Taurus, which is an earth sign, going to make it a great time to work on our root plants, whatever they may be at the moment. Maybe it's getting your taro patch ready to get those beautiful hulis in the ground. And then next Tuesday, the moon moving into Gemini, an air sign, making it a good time for flowers. We're just going to be reaching the perigee, or the low point of the moon's path. And so we're just about to get into planting time again.
Yeah. So awesome. And again, the perigee, when you see it, it's its lowest point. That's when it's furthest away from the earth.
I actually don't know looking at it that way. Perigee is the point at which it's at its most southern declination.
Okay. So. Cool. And so the influence is greater or lesser, or just different at that time?
Just different, uh-huh. Yeah. It brings it into the lower parts of the plant.
Right. Fantastic. Well, this is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts, Paul and Robin. And right now we are going to open a new section of the show that we haven't done before. And so maybe you hear this little creaking sound. We're opening up the medicine chest. And this is going to be an opportunity for us every now and again on the show to highlight plants that have reputed use, traditional use, or we could simply report that people grow them for not perhaps primarily their food value, but for other effects that they may have on the human body. And I know Robin is eager to say a couple more things about just in terms of introduction of this section as well.
Sure. We want to be extremely cautious that we are not making any health claims to anyone or necessarily recommending this as treatment for anything. But as we all know, as gardeners, plants can be just such good friends of ours, such allies. And so we'd like to let you know about some research that's being done or already has been done about a plant very, very close to our hearts, and that is Olena or turmeric, which happens to be making its presence in the market more and more and more now as harvest season is really upon us. We get about 3 good months of fresh turmeric at the farmer's market when all goes well.
And it actually starts with it making its appearance above ground, as with other rhizomatic plants related to, like gingers, they actually pop out of the soil, and they kind of the tops will die back yellow or fall over perhaps in the heavier rains, and you will see that this turmeric, this Olena, is waiting for us to collect it. Yeah?
Indeed, and that as plants are so elegant in the way they like to talk to us, as long as we're observant enough to listen, the fact that the foliage dries back or dies back would indicate to us that it's time to harvest the plant.
Truly. And if you leave it in the ground, it can become perpetual in an area, so you don't necessarily have to harvest a particular clump. However, a lot of that root mass that will have been created will rot in the ground, and you just essentially lose the opportunity to have the harvest. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So in the market, I noticed there's a couple of different kinds of turmeric. And after talking to one of our fine tuber growers here on the island, Ben Ferris, I learned that there aren't real specific names for them. But I think that we've seen there's turmeric that's a brighter yellow color, and then there's a turmeric that's like a dark orange, like a carrot. Mm-hmm. I wasn't able to get from him if he thought one was more better than another, just that they are unique. The way I like to use my turmeric is to slice it and dehydrate it and powder it so I have it readily accessible in my spice cabinet all the time. And I have to admit that I like the darker orange one because I just think it's just such a beautiful color to want to merge with. Yeah. But
and you had a exciting thing to report in terms of his marketing of this
yes.
particular crop.
Yes, we have so many just great organic farmers on our island, and people are motivated, they're hardworking, and I just give kudos. I talked to Ben, and he told me that his ginger and turmeric is sold in all 50 states of the United States. And that is just absolutely phenomenal to me, that one farm can be that productive.
Indeed, and hats off to you, Ben, and how exciting for all Kauai growers to know that if you're growing the right crop, that our tiny little island in the middle of the Pacific Ocean can be a major source of a particular crop that it would be in demand all across the United States. It shows the potential of what we have here on Kauai, really.
It truly does, and if you're interested in checking out Ben's turmeric or ginger here on island. I know it is available at some stores, but I'm not exactly sure, so I don't want to say and then be wrong. But I know that the Thursday farmers market in Kilauea Town around 4 p.m. or 4:30 p.m. Ben's there every week with his beautiful produce. So if you were interested, you could go learn some more there and pick some up if you like.
That's where I met Ben maybe 10 years ago. And I for sure it was the Olena that I just was astounded by the price, first of all, how affordable he makes it, and just the beautiful, the beauty of that thing, you know, growing up on the mainland and being familiar with turmeric as a spice that mom would use in the curry and that kind of thing, and then to actually see it as a living plant, to come to know it as a healing plant through the Lapa'aula'au traditions, through Kumulavan Ojai, and just the encouragement that he would give us to have it be a regular part of what we would consume, even just as a preventative agent, to put it in our water, just chop up some Olena and stick it in your water bottle and have it with you along with the neoi, the chili pepper and the garlic, and just have it be that tonic that you drink all the time to stay healthy and strong. But we can let you know that other people do use it for a variety of ailments, and that it is it can be a good friend to those in need.
Absolutely. There's studies being done that prove its anti-inflammatory qualities, immune boosting, I believe, as well. Its color, yellow, orange, leads us to believe that it could have qualities, and I believe there's studies being done on its effect with our liver and our organs, other organs. So all around, just a real gift to our island, so widely available right now. Some of the freshest and most beautiful turmeric you can find anywhere. And here we are, and no shortage on Kauai.
And it's one of those things that you can have a really good success with without being a master gardener. Somebody accused me of being a master gardener today. I said, no, maybe not, but working on it. I'm definitely a student of heading in the direction of perfection, never expecting it to get there. But Olena is one of those ones that if you're just getting going, even from the beginning, it would be one of those first plants to just put in. And it tolerates marginal soils. It has a tremendous flower that a lot
incredible.
Of people are, you know, just blown over by if they happen to see a stand of Olena in flower. And what is that? They need to know. What is this thing? And, of course, you can grow it. It probably, I would imagine that it probably has much better quality if you are to grow it in better than marginal soil. But it is one of those warrior plants that really can survive in demanding conditions. So.
Yes, exactly. And then as we improve ourselves garden by garden, we learn better and better ways to do things. And I hope that at some time in the future we can have farmers like Ben be on the show with us and give us some of his secrets of how he grows such wonderful crops of ginger and turmeric.
Truly. And we always love to get the Kauai'i farmers, into the studio. And I know that we're always also feeling a bit guilty when we're successful in doing that because we're getting them away from their farm. But we do have an opportunity to see them out in the world, and we're always happy to share our discussions with them, with you, our listeners. Maybe a last thing that we could say on Olena. I'm not sure if you have anything else, Robin. But just to say that it is revered as a spiritual cleanser as well. So in the Hawaiian traditional practices, Olena mixed with water was used to sanctify an area, to basically clear away any disruptive energies that might be present before something very sacred were to occur, or even just to clear a space for Ho'oponopono. Olena is revered as being spiritually medicinal as well. So certainly a blessing to have in our gardens. Mahalo to the spirit of Olena. And yeah, I've got a bucket out in the truck, and I'm looking forward to sharing some with you after the show, Robin.
Excellent. Mahalo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we are going to jump right ahead to the second in our series of plant family. We do a series of topics regarding plant families, and we started last week with Apiaceae, which is the dill, celery, carrot family. We discussed the breadth and the depth of species that are found here on Kauai as well as worldwide, some new ones we might want to experiment with. And then in the second week, we look at good growing techniques. So how can you have success with this particular family of plants in your garden? And Robin's going to start off for us.
Yeah, I'm going to start off with potentially one of the most popular of all garden plants, and that would be cilantro. Everyone, well, not everyone loves cilantro. I know there's a small group of people out there who have a aversion to it, but generally speaking, cilantro is extremely popular, tends to be a little bit more tricky to grow than some of the other ones. Certainly if I was going to compare it to dill, there's almost no comparison. Dill grows by itself. Cilantro has some requirements. And the first thing to know is cilantro is also known as coriander. And when you get cilantro seeds, they're going to look a lot like the coriander seeds that you have in your spice rack. And indeed, they are exactly the same.
In fact, they're going to look exactly alike.
They are the same thing. And what's cool about the cilantro is that it's actually a polyembryonic, or really just biembryonic, technically, because each one seed actually gives birth to two plants. And so for people who have had a really difficult time, one of the first things we can recommend is potentially very gently with a rolling pin, but not to crush or pulverize the seeds like you're going to use them in your curry, but just to split those seeds in half can sometimes really improve the germination rate if you've been having trouble. It prefers a pH of about 6.5 to 7.5, which is a little higher than your maybe, you know, 7.5 is kind of getting up there. It likes well-drained and rich soil. It likes at least 6 hours of full sun per day. However, the heat of the afternoon sun can sometimes be a little bit oppressive to it. And we've all seen this many times, us gardeners, the cilantro just went right to flower. It went right into flower and seed mode, and you missed out on really getting any of the produce. So I can recommend to people that some afternoon shade, if your garden is very, very sunny in the afternoon, can sometimes be helpful.
It seems like when, even before it goes to flower, cilantro kind of changes its leaf structure, and when that happens, it's you really lose those strong essential oil characteristics that give it its flavor. What do you think?
I actually think the flavor's milder before it goes into flower, and that it changes to become a little stronger. At that point, I'm certainly not above just using some of those leaves or even a young flower tip in right in the soup as like a garni, a bouquet garni, they call. You just boil it in there and then remove it.
Okay.
Not necessarily sliced up. Certainly if you're desperate for the flavor and that's all you got, it's not going to hurt you.
Right.
Other possibilities, if you've really had a hard time making cilantro grow well in the garden, is that it's a good companion to beans and peas. So if thus far you haven't had any luck, maybe trying that combination could work out really good for you.
Yep. And it is one that does well with direct seeding.
And it also does well with direct seeding. In fact, in the hottest time of the year, that's commercially how it's mainly grown. Mm-hmm. I want to say that cilantro is one of those plants that if you have the space in your garden, you can allow it to go to seed, to go ahead and bolt, and go ahead and drop its seeds. And the reseedlings, as I call them, of those tend to be much hardier and stronger. And so if you're that dedicated to cilantro and you have some space in your garden that you could allow that to happen, we know that when we let a plant go all the way to maturity, it does take time. But the resprouts that come up from those reseeded, that reseed themselves are actually quite strong, and you can build yourself over time a small little patch of cilantro that you would probably have some almost all year round without having to sow it.
And what about the root? I mean, we see so many of the roots of the Apiaceae family that we're covering now be the part that you use. Is cilantro root something you've ever experimented with? Or?
It isn't. I don't know that for sure, but I do know that sometimes when you can buy the plant, buy the produce at the farmer's market, they have been uprooted, and I do know people that have trimmed them back and replanted those, and they will often do just fine.
Cool.
Yeah, and there's also a little notion going around right now, the same thing for celery, that you can actually replant a celery that you've bought at the store, and it will continue to grow. It can sprout roots.
Cool.
And continue to grow, which I think is pretty cool.
Fun. It is half past the hour. I want to let you know you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts Robin and Paul. Robin's giving us a super download on growing various Apiaceae plants. Robin.
Yes. Well, I'll move right along to parsley to move on. And parsley is a bit easier to grow. It lasts much longer in the ground, has a much longer lifespan. It is a biennial, so you can get about 2 years of parsley harvesting off of a really nice parsley plant. I prefer to keep both in the garden, a little curly and a little flat leaf, because there's different reasons to use them in the kitchen. Both of them prefer a pH from around 6 to 7. Fairly rich soil again. Good spacing is important with our parsleys, because when they're crowded, the feeder roots can compete with one another and the plants are just simply smaller. And we see this often, and when we crowd our plants, they don't necessarily get the space and the energy they need to develop into their true full selves. And a nice parsley plant can really actually be almost 2 feet across. They're huge, really a big plant. And I say with parsley, important to not have it too wet, as it can rot easily. I know I've seen it plenty of times. Suddenly the parsley looks a little droopy in the afternoon, and I go over there to pick some, and the whole entire thing just
comes away.
Yeah. And that was some root rot there at the base. I think that's how most people wind up losing the parsleys, is from rot. So we want to make sure that they're in nicely well-drained soil. Very different from their bigger cousin, celery.
And before you jump in on that, I do want to say that when I was over at One Song Farm maybe a week ago, and Lisa was showing me where they grow their parsley, and they actually grow it in a container. And they've got some sort of special, I can't remember the name, but it's one of these containers where you just put the water into a reservoir at the bottom.
Earth boxes.
Earth boxes. So they've got them in the earth boxes, but the tip that Lisa shared with me was that they don't grow their parsley in the soil because they're so adversely affected by nematode, or those microscopic roundworms that burrow into the roots and cause all kinds of dysfunction to the plant. And so she said it really makes a difference in the flavor. And so that's primarily why they grow parsley only in these earth boxes and not in the soil.
Excellent. That's a great tip. And I know, too, celery is also pretty susceptible to nematodes. Although celery, because it's a bog plant in reality, it can take a slightly more acidic pH. Generally, a standing water area is going to be a little bit more acidic, somewhere around 6.0. And celeries here can grow up to 2 feet tall and 2 feet wide. They're absolutely incredible. Dark green, luscious, so long as they're fed well enough. That's the other nice requirement for celery, is plenty of water and plenty of food.
Right.
And so when we see our celeries kind of getting a little yellow, it's not the time to turn our backs on them and say, oh, it's dying. No, actually, it's asking to be fed, and it receives food very nicely in pretty much any form you like. If you want to use a tea, or just side dressing with a nice nitrogen fertilizer, you'll see the green return to it just super fast. The other thing that's different about homegrown celery than celery that we would find in the grocery store is basically commercial celery undergoes a process that farmers call blanching. And blanching simply means burying the stems under earth. And what happens when we do that is they don't produce any more chlorophyll. They become lighter green or even white in color. They're certainly juicier and more tender when they've been blanched. So garden plants here, I prefer to not blanch the celery. And you're going to get a darker green, slightly stringier stalk of celery out of that. So you're certainly welcome to experiment with blanching.
Yeah, built-in dental floss.
Indeed. The flavor is much stronger. I believe that not blanching is increasing the chlorophyll content, is just ultimately makes it a little bit healthier for us to eat.
Gotta be.
And celery is just such a great plant to have in the garden because for a couple of years, you can pretty much go out there and slice off a few stalks as you need them. Uh-huh. And it's great because there's no waste there. You're just using them as you need them, as I say, storing them in the garden pantry mm-hmm. for when you need them again.
Nice. Now, there were a couple of different main different types that you were growing, a Japanese type and a...
Sure, there's Kinsai. Kinsai is the Chinese celery, okay. And those notably have hollow stems, so very different from a traditional celery that we're used to. However, incredible flavor. Celeries in general are going to make puppies, as I call it, or like a taro plant that makes cakey plants all along the side. And if I'm going to keep the celery in the ground for those 2 years, I'm going to carve off the keikis, because I think what happens if I let too many of them grow, the plant gets a bit congested and it's hard for it to breathe well, and ultimately that can encourage pest problems.
Right. Speaking of puppies, we did get a call recently that a small black puppy is loose just below the garden at Kalihiwai. Has a collar and doesn't sound like the collar, I'm sorry, has a collar as in the thing
he's
that goes around
tag.
The dog's neck, but the collar, the person who called in, it doesn't seem actually caught the puppy. But if you own a small black puppy in the region of the Kalihiwai Community Garden, it's out. So
you can give us a call here for more information.
Indeed. So, celery by division, and then you can just keep them going indefinitely like that?
Yes, actually, I think Sun and Lisa did some experimenting with growing them by division. I don't have that experience myself. Then the standard kind of commercial variety here, at least that I prefer, is Tango, is a great full-grown celery with solid stems, at least through its earlier part of its life. I noticed that over time the stems on an older plant can get hollow also.
Right.
Another reason, I'm sure, why blanching is used in commercial growing.
Cool. And those Tango plants you donated to the food forest early on were a great treat for people who both knew they were there, but certainly for people who didn't know that they had been planted and went for a wander in the food forest. And, oh my gosh, I found a celery plant. A couple people were just, like, so excited about that, so...
Yeah, absolutely.
And we did put them in a bit of a wetter area, as you had recommended, given that it is sort of a bog plant.
Well, great. What a good choice for the food forest, as each celery flower that sprouts up after a couple of years of growth can yield somewhere around 10,000 seeds.
Wow.
Certainly a great choice if you're looking to naturalize a plant into an area like you guys are in the food forest.
Yeah, awesome for that. Thank you.
Yeah, so we're working our way up the chain into more and more substantial meals here with the APACA, starting with cilantro and parsley, used more as herbs and garnishes. Celery, certainly a a great additive to any of our soups or heartier meals, but probably the favored of all of the APACA.
Across the whole world.
Worldwide it is.
Carrots.
Yay!
Yeah. So carrots do grow here on Kauai. At first surprised even to see them in the at the farmer's market. And then I think the the next thing was Michael Wise's amazing garden, Michael and Patty's garden out in Mulawa'a, back when they had the massive sort of Valhalla garden there, and the purple, the cosmic purple carrots, to find a patch of these carrots growing. And just, wow, they grow here on Kauai. This is the greatest thing ever. Had a little bit of success with those new Kurotas, subtropical varieties. And Robin and I have both produced some seed, learned a few things on the way. But what I want to share with you is I had the good fortune to speak just today with Rich Olson. And he's the new manager of a new division of Kauai Fresh Farms located up there in Kalihiwai. And the division is Kauai Fresh Farms Naturals. And he's going to be producing a lot of naturally grown outdoor crops, vegetable crops for us. And he's a real master carrot grower. Not that I've heard it from him, but I sure have heard it from folks who've had his carrots. And so I knew he was the right person to get some input on, and on this. And so here's Rich's input on growing carrots: is you really need to have loose soil. And he said that some people think you need light soil on top of loose soil, and that heavy soils really are not useful for carrots. But he said heavy soils have been fine for him, just so long as he really cultivates the soil down deep and makes sure that those carrots, of course, as they're growing, want to be able to make room for themselves as they're growing through the soil. So don't be deterred if you have a heavy soil, but you sure should work it, make a raised bed, and pay attention to not only that, but also a really fine seed bed, because this is certainly a crop that you are going to direct seed. And it's very important that that you do not allow a crust to develop on the surface of the soil before germination occurs, which can take a couple of weeks with carrots. And a lot of times people wonder, because they take longer to emerge from the soil, whether or not they're really going to come along. And sometimes they will discover, I'll put in too, that carrot seed generally is not very long-lived. And so unless you've kept your carrot seed exquisitely dry and in the refrigerator, if it's been a couple few years, it may be that you've lost germination. You may want to just go for a fresh lot of seed to start, because certainly, again, you've put so much time and effort into preparing the bed, you don't want the seed to fail on you. Rich shares as well that if you wind up with hairy carrots, that what's happened is you've had too much nitrogen, and truly carrots do not need a nutrient-rich soil. They're not a heavy feeding crop. They do, however, love phosphorus. And his recommendation is that it's fine to seed them close together, and he thinks that people have a tendency to overthin their carrots. It is quite surprising when you see a carrot bed that hasn't been heavily thinned, that there's actually a huge amount of carrots in there. You can't believe when you see the tops and how closely crowded there are, how many fine, large carrots can be in there. So that's his recommendation, is don't overthin, and feel free to seed close, but don't seed close in the summertime, where there can be a tendency for a white mold to form at the base of the greens, and then ultimately the carrot rots away. And in his experience, that happens more in the summertime. And he uses a 3-foot wide bed, drip tape down the middle. He sows his seeds in furrows about half an inch deep, and he does use a pathway seeder, which he sets at the light carrot setting. And so that actually creates the furrow as well. And the dense stand, of course, helps to keep out weeds. And you do want to let your carrots dry out, or rather to say the bed, you don't want to overwater it as the carrots are maturing, which would be the opposite of what you want to do when you're germinating the seed. You must keep it wet, but then as they get more mature, you want it to more dry out. And last thing to say is just that he recommends those deep purple carrots as a winner. When I pressed him for which varieties he prefers, he he chose to keep that close to his vest, as they say. Sometimes, you know, those little discoveries are the gold, but we sure are looking forward to enjoying the carrots from Rich, who's just come over from, I'd say in the past number of months, over from Hawaii Island. And he's going to get up and running, growing carrots for us here on the North Shore of Kauai. And whatever variety they may be, I'm sure I'm going to line up to try them.
Yeah, no doubt. I have to say, for me in my garden, I haven't had great luck with anything orange. The purple carrots have done extremely well for me. The dragon, the cosmic purple, atomic red. There's quite a few names for those varieties. The best orange carrot for me has been the one that the Kauai Community Seed Bank has produced, which is the new Kuroda, a subtropical variety. It's just did so well. Delicious, long roots, fairly effortlessly, which had not been my experience with carrots before. I don't know if it was the chemistry of the soil that was inhibiting any of the mainland varieties of carrots to grow well, but I actually choose to just to throw in a little one of my tips, and it turns out that Dr. John Navazio, who's an expert carrot grower on the mainland, vegetable breeder we hope to have on the show someday soon, he likes to sow radish seeds nearby the carrots. And I've been practicing this too, because carrot seeds can take 7 to 10 days to 2 weeks even to germinate. If you're really into your garden, I mean, that's excruciating. Those last 4 days are just excruciating. Where are they? Are they going to come up? Are they going to come up? And so you get a few radishes popping up within 3 or 4 days of sowing, and suddenly you just feel so much better. But Dr. John Navazio recommends doing that simply to mark where the carrots are, and those other seeds breaking through the surface will inhibit any crust from forming on the earth. So there's a multiple purpose. Now, we're not going to let those radishes and or turnips, if you choose to use those, come to fruition. Those are eaten as sprouts, basically, so as not to interfere with the carrot growing.
Right. So cool. And so I hope that some of those tips meant something to you, and you find that your next crop of celery, parsley, cilantro, or carrots is more bountiful, and look forward to hearing about the results from you as well. So this is In the Garden on the Farm with Robin and Paul, and we're going to step into our last segment of the show, Secrets of the Soil Builders, and it's been fun doing the planning with Robin on this particular segment. There's a whole world, and so we've had a lot of fun sort of listing out the things we'd like to talk about. But there was a timely topic for me personally, because yesterday at the Kalihiwai Food Forest, we had the great occasion to trial out a chipper shredder. And this was thanks to Linda Driscoll, and Richard White came and helped us out. Richard Briand White. So thanks to you two for the donation of your time and energy. And we were able to chip up a lot of the nitrogen-fixing trees that we've been trimming out and just kind of feel it out. You know, is this the kind of thing we want? So that, I think that's really the big question we start with, is like, before we start talking about what kind of chipper to get, is why would you even want such a thing? And so we want to look at, you know, what's it for? And just as a beginning place, I think a lot of chippers, shredders get sold because of what people don't want. They don't want a whole bunch of brush sitting around, or at least the marketers convince people that having brush at the edge of, you know, your land is a bad thing somehow. And that's sort of one way to look at it, is I'm getting rid of something by chipping it. But then, of course, for us farmers and gardeners, we're thinking, what can I get? What is the product that is a result of this? So jump on in, Robin.
Yeah, sure. I think that chippers are fabulous because they can convert our yard waste into valuable compost material. To me, that is the number one reason to want to be chipping things. And I've said this many times, but if we're really into our gardens, we must be equally into our compost piles. And when we really dive into our compost piles, we want to know everything that's in there. We want to be making really top quality compost. And then maybe we even really want to make a lot of it, not just a little of it. And so you start looking at what you can use and you start seeing all these otherwise known as waste products falling from the trees in form of leaves, prunings, and we can really create some excellent compost with the materials we have around us.
Right. And so if any of the listeners out there are like me who have flagged down the shredder trucks that are clearing trees from the highway, or maybe some of the people who go to trim people's coconut trees especially, and sort of you see them in the neighborhood and you make a deal with a driver to drop them off at your place, but then maybe the next day you're driving green waste down to the transfer station. It's like, what am I missing here? I'm importing organic matter and I'm exporting organic matter. And what about any of the sort of less desirable things? Certainly it's good to have chips, and certainly when those occasions arise, I'm always going to be interested in pursuing those opportunistic situations. But there are some problems. You could be bringing in chip material that has invasive seeds or even insects. I believe that we have gotten a pretty serious infestation of ants from a chipper. And certainly we've gotten nut grass and other invasive weeds come in. As well, sometimes the kinds of trees that are part of maybe a whole mix that you might get as a chipped solution could contain trees or other plants that have plant growth inhibitors, like the strong essential oils from a camphor tree or a eucalyptus or something like that. So great for pathways where you don't want weeds to grow. But again, we're focusing on gardens and farms and wanting to create good quality soil. So, of course, what you put in, just the diet of the chipped material, is going to determine the quality of your product. And when you have access to huge amounts of nitrogen-fixing trees like the albizias that grow around our farm, I'm starting to think, gosh, wouldn't it make sense to have our own chipper where we could make the highest quality stuff available? And certainly putting it into a compost pile is one thing, but if you have a large enough pile of chips, if you just leave it sitting around for a couple of years, it just, the worms turn it into the most incredible compost itself. So
indeed, or you can actively mix things together. So I just wanted to talk to the smallholders, people with smaller yards, smaller spaces, about the difference between a chipper and a shredder. And then there are some machines that are called chipper shredders. And basically a shredder is for leaves, for small twigs, and for non-stemmy garden waste. So when you're looking at shredders, you want to make sure the model you choose can do dry leaves and or wet leaves. And wet, I mean by got rained on wet, and I also mean green, right, or growing things that have just been cut down. Yeah. Those shredders you can find for like under $1,000. Uh-huh. A chipper, a dedicated chipper, is for larger diameter branches and bush prunings. They act kind of like supersonic potato slicers. And you can find a chipper for a few bitcoins. So those are kind of the two home options. And I know, Paul, you've looked more into larger options for farmers.
Yeah, I am looking into that. And just to say that some of the considerations, like Robin said, is first off, what is the size of your farm, your garden, your project? How much material do you plan on processing? Of course, the purchase price of the equipment is going to come into consideration. And some of these commercial units are in the tens of thousands of dollars. And that, of course, before you factor in how much it's going to cost to service it, how much it's going to cost to replace the blades or the knives, sometimes they're called, or other hoses and other kinds of things that will add to the cost. You can be looking at new or used equipment. If you're looking at used, you want to think about how much it's been used.
How many hours are on the machine?
The bigger ones have an hour clock on them, so you can figure that in. And then as well, the diameter of the chip material is also really important to consider, and you'll often hear, you know, it handles 6-inch, 8-inch, 10-inch diameter material. And I would just encourage folks to get out there with a ruler, because we think we know how big that material is, or we'd sort of guess, oh, I could chip most of the stuff at my place and it's probably under 6 inches. Well, get out there and you may discover, wow, 75% of what I have is actually 8 or 10 inches thick. And so just to consider that. And then also the kinds of materials. Robin talked about leaves and branches, but then you also need to consider bamboo. Linda and Richard, who lent out their machine yesterday, both were very clear. There's no bamboo, is there? So I gather bamboo, perhaps it's the fiber, but it can bind up a regular or a chipper that's not up to the challenge. And so they do actually make sort of mid-size units that specifically are for chipping up bamboo. And so all these things to consider. We're going to be shopping for one for the Regeneration Seed Center. And here on Kauai, it's kind of a small market. We do have some suppliers. We know that our own Kauai Marine and Mower, as well as Kawamura Farm Enterprises, have some options. Rentals are not very available in the larger market, so that might be another reason to incent you to buy one. But then, of course, you could rent not only the machine, but you could rent the person and the machine. And certainly there are a number of operators out there who offer that kind of service as well.
Exactly. And because running chippers can be rather dangerous, depending on your strength and your mojo, you may consider just hiring someone to come do the job.
Right, indeed. So, yeah, if you do use them, of course you want to make sure that you have ear, eye, skin protection. Make sure you don't have any loose clothing so you don't get dragged into the machine. And clear communication before and during the operation. Make sure there's just one person who's sort of like the chief. And whatever they say is what people do.
Yes.
If somebody new comes on to the work site, probably a good idea for everybody to stop and sort of have a recheck in, because it's not worth the significant injuries that could result, let us say, with chippers. So anyway, definitely a good secret for the soil builder. Do consider using these chips. Even if you're using it as a top mulch on trees, eventually, especially here in the subtropics, all organic matter eventually breaks down. So it will become soil eventually, and it's a great way to speed up the process. So this has been In the Garden on the Farm, and we do have a couple of quick announcements. There is a salve, tincture, and tonic workshop. Thank goodness for the Kekaha Community Garden, who keeps cranking out these fine workshops. This one, Saturday, December 14th, from 2 to 4 p.m. down at the Kekaha Community Garden. Learn how to make and use healing body salves from garden plants, salves and tinctures, healing plants and uses, expressing and infusing, poultices, tonics, recipes, and more. If you want more information, call 631-4982, or you can email kcgoutreachcoordinator@gmail.com. As well, Jean-Marie Jocelyn and Marta Lane's cooking demo is coming up this evening, 5 p.m., and it's at the shops at Kukui'ula during the Kauai Culinary Market. And Jean-Marie will be offering up some tapas as well as demonstrating how they're prepared. And Marta is going to be signing copies of her new book on Tasting Kauai, covering the restaurants of Kauai. And that's about all there is to this episode. And it's been great being with you today.
Mahalo.
Yeah. So this has been In the Garden on the Farm with your hosts,
Robin
and Paul. And we'd like to
ask you to tune in again next week.
Yeah.
For more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life.
Mahalo, Kauai.